This is Foul Ball Area.
Foul Ball Area.
A special edition bringing you exclusive interviews with baseball figures from around the world.
I don't know if you've seen the story recently that Manny Ramirez was considering coming out of retirement age 114. You know, I was actually the person that broke that story.
While I'm calling the game, news gets out that the NCAA tournament is going to be played in front of no fan. So all of this is happening while I'm on the ACC Network broadcast.
He's super excited for being in the Rays organization, just how there's such an analytical organization, such an organization that puts a precedent on that.
Now, here's today's episode of Foul Ball Area.
We are very pleased to be joined by Eric Kratz of the New York Yankees today on today's episode of Foul Ball Area. Eric, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So awesome to have a current Yankee. I'm kind of like really excited about this. And obviously with your Harrisonburg ties, kind of giving that a local feel for us both being Virginia kids. So I just want to dive into obviously probably the most positive thing with the Yankees the last couple weeks was Davey Garcia and your unique relationship. Like, it was definitely very father-son like. So what was it like kind of building that relationship with him and then him, you know, just shredding it in his first start?
You know what? It was something that when they called him up last year, you know, the whole father-son thing just kind of came about. It was funny because my boys were coming to the park at, you know, at the same time. So they would come to the park, they would shag BP, they would help catch with some of the guys that, you know, some of the pitchers that needed somebody to throw with, you know, it hit in the cage when guys weren't in there. So it was something that my boys were already around the park and they're already around the clubhouse and everything. And then when he shows up, it was like, holy cow, this guy's 19 years younger than me. He could be my son. So it was an easy relationship to start too. You know, joking aside, he's just an incredible kid who has incredible talent, but he just has that, I don't like when people say it factor, but he has that factor in his personality that he wants to get better, but he doesn't want to just get better, you know, by throwing more baseballs or by he's intelligent, he's calculated by things that he does. I think that's what's exciting about him.
We've seen this viral video of a Zoom interview that you were doing all over Twitter. And for those of our listeners that haven't seen it or haven't heard this yet, can you tell us a little bit about your relationship, not just with Garcia, but with all the young Latin pitchers and players that you've worked with throughout your career?
Yeah, I think anytime I guess you cry on a Zoom call, I guess it ends up going viral. But it's something that it's a, you know, like I said in that interview, it's something that I see where these guys come from, and I see the effort that they put into it, and I see the talent that they have. And sometimes it gets missed. Sometimes it gets, you know, he doesn't have this or that. And that's not necessarily just a Latino player thing. It's an American player thing. It's a Canadian player thing. Whatever the country is that you come from, I think baseball sometimes, because of the business nature of it, forgets about the human aspect of it. And the human aspect cannot always be, you can't always just keep guys because you're like, well, he tried really hard. You know, that's not,
yeah,
that's the nature. The nature of the game is, you know, you have to improve or you have to move on. And playing down in Dominican, I think, gave me a new appreciation for where the players came from. And I played down there in 2009. But just getting to know different guys, even getting to know some of the Latino coaches throughout my career and having conversations with them about, you know, about different cultural differences. And I see it sometimes in Japanese players too. I enjoy making that connection, that relationship with those guys too, because, you know, you don't have you don't have those people. You don't have as many people to connect with in the clubhouse when you are, when you don't speak the predominant language that's spoken, or you don't feel comfortable speaking. And the best way to win is to make everybody feel comfortable in the clubhouse. Yes, you, everybody has to learn. Everybody has to improve, all that stuff. That's, you know, we're not just singing Kumbaya in the clubhouse and going out there and winning games. You have to have a complete aspect of everything going on in the clubhouse. But I think that's one of them. If you come to the ballpark and you're like, oh, here comes 8 hours of my day where I don't feel comfortable saying anything and I'm just going to sit on my phone the whole time, you know, I don't think there's that connection that you make. And I think that's part of, you know, that's part of that connection with Latino pitchers. Yes. But with Latino position players, with Japanese pitchers, with, you know, as a catcher, you have that, you constantly have that connection with position players, but also with pitchers. And it's kind of, you're kind of that intermediary on a roster of 25, 26 guys.
Obviously the season's like a completely different mindset. It's like a lot more of a sprint, being only 60 games and you're like literally in the home stretch at this point as we're in the middle of September. Just talk about like how different the mindset is as you're basically playing. Like, I think someone equated to like every game's worth like three games basically towards a normal season.
Yeah. I mean, the mindset's huge. I think I have an advantage over some people as a up and down guy, a guy that's never really stuck for any point of any season. You know, I always feel like I come to the park and I look, you know, does the manager want to call me into the out? Like, are they going to send me down? No matter how well I've been doing or not doing, it's something that is very evident in a season like this. You just don't have the luxury of having 550 at-bats for everything to level out. You don't have the luxury of, you know, having a bad streak here or there. And it's exciting, but it's also, you know, it can be frustrating for some guys. It can be frustrating for guys who are used to being on the field 150 games out of the year, and a little bump in the road for 20 games isn't that big of a deal. You know, you just kind of, you work through it. Well, 20 games is a third of our season. It's something that it really tests your mental fortitude. It really tests your focus on your routine. And the fact that today is a new day and you eliminate the negative from the day before and you go back out there, it is quite a sprint, that's for sure. It definitely will get you ready for the playoffs.
But this season has gone pretty well for you personally. David Driver, the sports editor at the Daily News Record in Harrisonburg, pointed out on Twitter today that you're batting .296 this year, which is your best average in a season with more than six at-bats. So what do you attribute that success to this season?
They haven't caught the balls that I've hit. That's what I attribute it to. No, I mean, everybody can always say, oh, well, you know, he's hitting so well right now, and he's hitting – it's – you know, the balls haven't been caught. I've had seasons where I've started out, I went one year, I started out, I got traded to two different teams. And I started out 0 for 15 for both teams. Does that mean I was a worse player on those teams and I'm a better player now? I think you learn. Yes. I think, you know, if you ask everybody, well, you know, he's 40, so he has to be getting worse. You know what? I don't buy into that. I don't buy into that whole mindset of, well, you know, because you get in the batter's box and you don't put your ID on home plate and say, well, he's 40, so you can't throw anything over 91 miles an hour, and you can, you know, we're just out there competing. And it kind of goes back to what you know with Davey, he's everyone's like, well, he's 5'9" or whatever, and it doesn't matter. Nobody cares what his height is. You know, he's going to go out and compete. And so that's the beauty of a short season like this, is young guys or old guys, it doesn't matter. Everybody's going out there to compete. And so to have to have better numbers to start the season, that's great. I mean, I think I, when I was with the Brewers, I think my first 16 at bats, I think I was hitting 500. So the season didn't end. I finished the season and hit 240. It's all about just having good at bats. It's all about trying to hit the ball hard. And, you know, you hope the ball finds some holes, and I've been fortunate that it has.
Obviously, not probably the stretch of games that you won or the team wants. Obviously, injury is a big issue with the team. I mean, the influx of the roster has been insane from a fan's point of view. How do you feel about, obviously, with the expanded playoffs, it's still a really good shot of making the postseason. Is this something the mindset of the team is, let's just get into the postseason and we know we can make a lot of noise?
I think probably when you get, you know, you get back in your hotel room after a tough loss, I think that's the thing that kind of brings you out of your bad feeling about that game. But I think it's something that if you're focusing on the playoffs while you're in the game, you're going to lose the game. Your mindset's going to veer from what needs to happen. And the teams that do the best when they make the playoffs are the teams that are able to take each at bat, each pitch, one pitch at a time, and understand the situations and understand what we need to do as a team. And I think that is so, so important during this time when we're struggling to find wins. You know, we're struggling to put together enough in a game to come out on top. So if you sit here and say, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of teams making it, so we're just going to get in, you know, you ain't going to get in. And when you do, you're not going to have the fight to do well. I've been on teams that have won over 100 games and first round out in the playoffs. I've been on teams that have just squeaked in and made it to game 7. And the difference is when it comes time for the playoffs, if you don't have your ducks in a row, and it's not about injuries. It's not about, because every team has injuries. I mean, you look on, you know, different websites, you look on team sites. It's like this person on a DL, this person on the IL, this person on a 10-day, you know, every team's going through it. So the team that figures out how to win and play each game, each pitch, each inning, whatever the situation is, one at a time, then you're, you know, that's the team that's going to come out on top and be ready to go once the postseason goes. And you're right. As soon as you get into the postseason, that's it. You're like you're in the postseason and everybody's record starts over at zero, but the mindset has to be that you're going to come out and absolutely dominate each and every day, each and every pitch. And, you know, you learn that during the season and then you take it into the postseason.
I was just looking at the schedule and see that tomorrow is Roberto Clemente Day around Major League Baseball. And of course, a few weeks ago was Jackie Robinson Day. What has it been like in the midst of everything going on in this country this summer to celebrate Jackie Robinson Day a few weeks ago and then Roberto Clemente Day coming up this week on the field in Major League Baseball?
I mean, I think it makes it extra special when you have the things that are going on in the country. When they're brought to light like they are, you have to recognize it. And I think a lot of people don't recognize sometimes what's going on in the country not because of ignorance, but because of selfishness, of worrying about what's going on in their own life. I think there's, you know, with the coronavirus, you know, the quarantines and everything, I think a lot of people have had a lot of time to self-reflect. And I think sometimes, you know, there's self-loathing. You know, you sit there and you say, oh, I don't have this or I don't have that, instead of appreciating what we do have. And I think the celebrations of what Roberto Clemente means for the Latin players and what Jackie Robinson means for integration in our sport, I think getting to celebrate those are our happy times and understanding that, you know what, we do appreciate the times that we get to, one, be on a baseball field, but two, you know, understand where we came from, understand where other people came from. And I think it's something that's really cool, that we get to celebrate both of those men and the things that they've done for this game.
Obviously, people talked about you wanted, you could possibly go into a coaching career after you're done playing, with the way you're performing. Hey, you might be like, you know what, I got this till I'm like, I'm be Tom Brady. Let me play till I'm 45. But have you looked at, like, maybe you're just like all in on this season and then looked at like a coaching career? Because obviously you can talk to your manager, Aaron Boone, who went from the field to ESPN, and obviously coaching. Obviously, if you want to look at your position, David Ross kind of is a good comparison to what you want to do. But have you looked at possibly becoming a coach after you're done playing?
I've been almost done playing for a long time, so yes, I have looked at this. It's one of those things that, as a father and a husband, I think I have to look at that kind of thing. I have to be realistic and be fair to my family that, you know, you have to look at the next thing. You can't just sit here and say, yeah, you know, I'm just going to keep playing until I can't walk anymore or anything like that. And it's something that I've been fortunate that physically I feel great. Physically, you know, I laugh when you said about Tom Brady, but I, as much as I'm not a fan of his because I'm an Eagles fan, I respect so much how much work he puts in to being out there on the field. And I think it's something that you can not just, you know, increase the longevity of your career, but you can increase the effectiveness of your career, no matter what the age is. And so I think it's something that, yes, I would like to keep playing, but yes, I would also, you know, I understand that there's a next step and I'm probably closer to the bottom of the ninth, two outs of my career. And so looking at, you know, talking to those coaches, talking to, you know, what is the life of a minor league coach? How does that impact my family and me being home? Because if it's just going to be me being gone, just like I am as a player, but I don't have the ability to play in the games, you know, I don't know that that's necessarily the best use of my talents. And I think I've had a unique career. And so I'd like to have a job that really kind of accentuates my unique career, in the sense of, like, I've been through so many different transactions and hopefully I can help different people in different situations of their career. And so just going out and being a double A hitting coach may not be the best fit for, you know, the things that I've been through and the way that I can hopefully help people.
I want to go back now to the beginning of your career, because for people in the Shenandoah Valley, they obviously know you as a Valley League alum, having played for a couple of teams in the league. And of course, the Valley League season was canceled this year due to coronavirus. So as a young player hoping to, you know, improve on your skills or get some more recognition, get your name out there in front of scouts, what does the summer league season mean to a young player? And what do you do if that season is taken away from you like it was this year?
Man, I've thought about that a lot. I've thought about that with, you know, freshmen in high school, seniors in high school, all those people, you know, freshmen in college, whatever it is, you know, I don't think there's one, everyone's like, oh, I feel the worst for the seniors, or I feel the worst for the sophomores who are now coming into the recruiting class. I feel the worst for the college senior. You know, I don't think there's any one group of people that isn't affected by this. I think the, you know, you specifically asked about summer ball, you specifically asked about the Valley League. I think it's something that someone that came from a Division III school, you need all the opportunities to be seen. I don't think scouts are clamoring to go see kids at a Division III school, but if you do get out there in, you know, in a league like the Valley League, and I was fortunate my first year, I made the All-Star team. So it kind of, you know, each of those steps helps. Each of those steps is a positive step. And I think there's, while there wasn't a Valley League, I think there's positive steps as a college player that that kids can still take. And I think it's kind of, it's one of those things that, like, nowadays there's so much reach from the internet. There's so much reach from videos and stuff. I think less and less people fall through the cracks, as far as from recruiting in high school and scouting in college, that I think there's opportunities. But I also think there's a huge opportunity to have a summer off. I mean, some of the best freshmen from the biggest schools come to the Valley League. You know, and you can sit there and have a mindset of, oh man, I should have been in the Cape. So and so is in the Alaska League, or so and so is in the Cape, and I should have. You know, you take advantage of the opportunity that you get, and I think it's your perspective on your opportunity that helps you get the most out of it. So you know what, you miss a year. I don't think they shut down exercising. I don't think they shut down being outside during quarantine. So improving your skills away from games, I think there's going to be a lot of people that didn't take advantage of this time where they didn't have any games in the Valley League as a summer baseball player. But I think there's going to be a lot of kids that did take advantage of it. And at that point in your life, and that point in your maturation as a player, as a human being, I think there is so much growth that can happen from working out, from mentally approaching the things that you need to do to be the best baseball player that you can. So I think it's really what you do with the situation. You know, how did you try to improve during this time, or did you just sit and wallow and say, oh, woe is me? And, you know, to me, that's a wasted summer.
Obviously, I want to talk about USA Baseball. You're rocking the nice USA Baseball shirt. You were able to represent Team USA during one of the World Baseball Classic. I think it's like a side tournament. Like, it's not the World Baseball Classic, but it's one of those intermediate tournaments they do. What was that like, just being able to represent Team USA on that kind of high of a level?
Yeah, it was an Olympic qualifier. It was called the Premier 12, and I think it's the second largest tournament in the world for baseball. The other countries sent, that don't have a huge, like Japan or Korea, that don't have a huge contingent in the MLB, they sent their best players, the same players that they would send to the WBC to play against all the MLB All-Stars from the Dominican, from Venezuela, from the United States, all that stuff. So it was legit competition. It was also something to know that you're playing for a chance to go to the Olympics, to call yourself an Olympian. It was it's hard to even put into words. As a kid, you grow up watching, didn't matter, Winter Olympics, Summer Olympics, you grow up watching those events. I was gonna say those games, but it's all the events, and you're so locked into it, and you're cheer. I hated it, the years when, like, the United States colors kind of look like other countries' colors, and I would watch, and I'm like, what are we? Are we blue? It didn't matter what the sport was. Like, are we the blue ping pong player? I think we're wearing white today. You know, you could, and then it, you know, it flashes across the bottom, which ones, who wins the gold and who wins silver. And like, you're just, the Olympics, I think they do a good job because it's once every 4 years or once every 2 years, summer and then winter. But I think they do a good job of just, like, you're so locked into your country's events, your countries, participants, competitors. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is to say you have an opportunity to be a part of that. It was absolutely incredible.
So Matt and I have had many discussions about just trying to increase the popularity of baseball, like across the country, maybe reaching out to new fans. And something we talked about was very similar. We took a page out of the the NBA's playbook. And so creating a dream team for the next Olympics for USA baseball, do you think that'd be possible? And do you think they should do that? Because imagine Mike Trout playing in the Olympics, like the greatest baseball player of all time playing in the Olympics. Like that should happen.
It should happen. It should happen. And I think it would make the Olympic baseball tournament probably the most watched sport, and no better time to do it than in Japan, where they absolutely love baseball. I think the issue would be the issue to that would be the fact that MLB owns the WBC, which has become a big tournament, and it's a big showcase for a lot of all-star players. So I think it would kind of be competing directly with that. Some of the home, you know, you'd have to stop the season, like the Japanese professional league, they're going to stop their season for the Olympics. But I think it would be awesome. I think the move would be to figure out how to sell the game as a whole, and sell what each player can do as a whole. And I think we're more of a regional country in selling it. Like, and you know, we can have a whole nother podcast about that, you know, in discussing what can and can't be done. You know, I think it's all opinions, but you know, if you have a game where the Brewers are playing the Royals, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be on national television. But if you have a game where the Chiefs are playing the Packers, you know, it's probably Monday Night Football. And so it's a different league, same cities, same, you know. So I think first you have to sell it. You have to sell baseball as a whole. When we were in Japan, they didn't, you know, you didn't see like all the Tokyo Giants fans stand up and cheer for the Tokyo Giant player that was playing for Team Samurai. They, you know, it was the next batter, and everybody there was cheering as hard as they could, even though, you know, they might be a Tokyo Giant fan, or they might be a Swallow fan, or they might be a, you know, Oryx Buffalo fan. You know, they cheered for their player because I think they really appreciate and love the game of baseball over there as a whole, and it's not as much of a regional sport as it is here.
So one of the guys that you've gotten to play with the Yankees, Brett Gardner, you played with him in a previous stint with New York, and then again now, he also played in the Valley League. He played for Newmarket for a couple of seasons. So do you guys ever get a chance to bond over that?
Just last night. We actually just talked about the fact that he played for Newmarket. And it's funny because he's, you know, he loves fishing and hunting and all that stuff. So he's like, I couldn't have played it. You couldn't have put me in a better spot to be out in nature, to be, he's like, you know, I think a lot of guys on the team are like, oh man, Newmarket. Like, what am I going to do in this town? And he's like, what? He's like, why do we even have to play the games? He's like, I just want to stay out. You know, he absolutely loves the area. I mean, he lives in South Carolina now, but he loved the area, and you know, it was like a second home for him. He enjoyed it so much.
Then I know you also played in the Rockingham County Baseball League for a little bit. I was told you played for the Broadway Bruins mm-hmm. when you played in that league. So I don't know how much you still follow along with that league, but the Bruins won the championship series this year, and it was the first time since the 1930s that they won the championship. So having played there before, what do you think this win means to the community of Broadway?
Oh, my goodness. Every one of those communities, they get behind their teams so much. You know, I don't think my two games that I played for the Bruins is going to go down in any record books, but it's something that the communities get behind it. And to a larger extent, you know, that's what I think some minor league teams in cities and towns across America mean to those towns. You know, I've seen how many fans come out to the Rockingham County games, and it's so awesome. You know, I'm a baseball player, but I'm a huge baseball fan, and I love seeing that stuff. I love talking to, you know, Valley greats like Austin Nicely. He was there. He was in it. You know, I think I just talked to him the other day, to see how they had done, and he said they had lost in game five. You know, it's something that the whole community gets behind, and that is something that it's so cool. It's so cool to watch. It's so cool to see. And I think if there was more population in the area, I think more and more people would come out to the game, because it's something you can root for. You can go to these games. You know, it's such a cool league. And I didn't know that the Bruins won it, but that's really cool that they did.
Obviously, the story around minor league baseball, besides not having a season, is the teams getting cut. And so, obviously, a guy who's traveled through the minors like you have, and you've kind of touched on it throughout our discussion, what do you think is the biggest effect that cutting these minor league teams will be?
Man, I think I hope. I mean, I guess worst case scenario, it doesn't sell the game. I mean, we just talked about selling the game. I think that kind of thing sells the game, sells the love of the game in communities that might not necessarily be touched by professional baseball that much. I think the Valley is an example of that. You know, I don't think Pulaski, Virginia is really touched by professional baseball that much. And when I say touched by it, you know, there's not a huge regional contingent of – you know, there might be some Orioles fans, there might be some Nats fans this year. There might be, you know, just that kind of thing. But when you take a team out of a city like that, now baseball's really not in people's minds. You know, it's not in the forefront of their minds. It's not, you know, kind of being always reminded of that. And I think that's tough, and I hope it doesn't affect negatively the growth of baseball, but I have a hard time seeing how it won't, because it's going to eliminate guys' chances. I mean, I don't think kids in college are going to sit here and say, well, now teams have two less minor league affiliates, you know, I have no shot of getting drafted. Well, that's not really what you're after anyway. So I think you're still going to get good enough players. I just think I feel bad for the guys who are going to get cut or not picked, because I would have been one of them. I would have been one of the ones that gotten cut. I would have been one of the ones that would not have gotten picked, because they, you know, in the 29th round, they're trying to fill out a roster, and they're like, hey, we need another catcher to play with our top three picks in a draft. And, you know, so I came from that realm of roster choices that I would have been the one that got cut.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tough situation, and one that we're going to be following closely. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know where they're at in the negotiations now, but hopefully they work something out so that they don't have to cut all of these teams and cut all of these roster spots. But Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It was great talking with you, and best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Trey. I appreciate it.
Go Yanks and go Birds.
Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.